So we were holding here in the middle of the Sugya Daf Chof Beis Amud Aleph, and basically we were getting into the question of what the Havacha is in terms of something that is owned by a Jew where a Goy will be working it on Shabbat, or we have the other case where a Kuti would be working it maybe during Chol HaMoed, which involves additional questions of Kutzmei Iver if you hold that Kutim are Gerei Emet and not Gerei Arayot. And basically, the Gemara made a very fundamental distinction, which was, we saw in Machloket, which was the concept of Arisa, Arisoteka Avid. When somebody normally rents out something for people who then, it's their business how they will use it. There's not a problem of people thinking that he's doing work on Shabbat. The things that are normally not rented out, where you would hire somebody to do a job for you, and it's called on your name, there we have a problem of a business that's open on Shabbat and doing things on Shabbat or during Chol HaMoed. So today we continue with a more complex issue, which is one of the most immediately relevant kind of questions that come up in the world all the time in terms of halacha l'maisa. This is an extremely complex subject, which is the din of joint ownership of businesses with a goy, which happens in so many businesses where the business must be open on Shabbat, and the question is, how do you deal with that without the Jew basically taking the money for the work that's being done on Shabbat and all the various things that are involved in that. And this sugya here, as short as it is, provides much of the grist for the mill of all of the poskim through the dairies that have been dealing with this sugya. Hanu Murukahi, the Ovid Kochavim, Naki Bishabbat, Avi Yisrael, Bechad Bishabbat. Now there was a crocus manufacturer that used to grow this very fine spice in gardens, and they had goyim that would be working there on Shabbat, and a Jew that would work during the week. And this was basically an arrangement of sharecropping where the two worked together. Now, also the Kamei de Rava. So they went to ask Rava whether such a thing is mutter. Shoralu, and he said that there'd be no problem because the Jew isn't working on Shabbos. Which Ravina immediately asked on Rava, Yisrael, Ve'ovei Kochavim, Shetivlu, Sadeh, B'Shutafut. Now, over here we're talking about the Kabbalah. So, I mean, we don't care who the owner is. The point, as we already said, by a Sadeh, it's the one who's doing the work, really, that counts, because that's how everybody looks at it. So the Yisrael and Ovei Kochavim here were mekabel this Sadeh B'Shutafut together. Lo yomar Yisrael Ovei Kochavim tolchel kecha b'Shabbat bani b'chol. The Jew cannot tell the goy, once they've already entered into the agreement of sharecropping with the owner, that, okay, now what we're going to do is you're going to do the Shabbat days and the Yom Tov days, so now I'll take a day to negate during the week. You can't say that. But if before you entered the agreement, mutar. Before you entered the agreement, you agreed that when we accept this deal, I, the Jew, have nothing to do with the Shabbat portion on it, and that's going to be left up to you to handle, then that means that initially the work on Shabbat has nothing to do with the Yisrael. And there's no problem with that at all. If they first agree to be joint kablanim, then you've got a problem, because then if the kablan Yisrael is sending the akum, at that point the akum becomes a shliach for the work the Jew needs to do on Shabbat, and he can't do that. But if over here the original arrangement leaves the Jew out of any responsibility for the Shabbat times, so then he's not viewed as a shliach at all. This is my portion, that's your portion. We have nothing to do with each other. Ve'im bo'u l'cheshbon asur. If at the end of the process they then get together and start making an accounting in which they say, okay, well, let's see now, how many Shabbatot were there? And, oh, I did those number of days, and what was the profit that you got on the Shabbat? What was the profit that I had on the whole Kenegdo? And you start making an accounting, then it appears that indeed, all along, they were actually dealing with it as if one was doing the job for the other one. Now, most Rishonim hold that this imbo lecheshbon is not going on the case of im hitznu mitzila, it's going on the case where no specific arrangement was made. They just did it. It just worked out this way. They accepted it. The guy took for granted. The Jew's not going to do any work on Shabbat. And nobody ever said anything to one another. It just sort of worked out. Then, if at the end of the process, they come to an accounting and the guy is worrying about how many days he took on Shabbat and did the Jew make up for those days and taking extra days during the week, then that retroactively shows that in essence he was working for the Jew on Shabbat. But if originally the Tanai had been that the Jew has nothing to do with Shabbat, so then if afterwards they try to work it out, you know, let's try to be fair. I mean, come on, I'm keeping this field going. After all, the work that I'm doing in this field is useful for you too. Obviously, if it isn't watered on Shabbat, how are you going to be able to grow your things during the week? I mean, you know, I think you ought to make up a little bit of the work that I did and that type of thing. Then, according to most Rishonim, like Rashi speaks this out at length here, it would be okay. There's only one Shita that argues and he has a hard time fitting the rest of the sugya into this, and that's the Raiva Shita. The Raiva Shita is that imbo lecheshbon means that if ex post facto, subsequent to an initial agreement before they actually sign on, that it's understood that the goy has the week neged the Shabbat that the Jew has, the goy has the Shabbat neged the week that the Jew has, then the subsequent accounting turns that into a farce. And a farce we don't allow. So even though technically we may have set this up initially that they're not really Shabbat Lagabi Shabbat, we can't have an arrangement that's going to have an accounting for Shabbat that the Jew is going to have to respond. As I said, this is an important machloket. So now, in any event, Rava was put into a sort of tight position over here because he had been matir this thing. And apparently there was no tznai milas haksila. And he was a little embarrassed. He had said it was mutter, and it appeared from here that the only way that it would be mutter was the fact that they had made a condition up front before they ever took on the job, that the job on Shabbat would not demand anything of the Jew. If so, poor Rava was embarrassed. L'sofik lo imilta yitznu mi'ikarahavi. In the end, it turned out that Rava had been right, though he didn't know it, and that actually he hadn't had all the facts, but there had been an agreement before they ever entered into the partnership. Now, Rav Gevia Mibeit Atil Amar. Rav Gevia Mibeit Atil came along and said, you know, I have never heard such a case. You have the whole case mixed up. It has nothing to do with the issues that you were reading into it. The case over there was not Morikai that were working on Shabbat. The case over there was that they had been working jointly on a field of Orla. That's what happened. And the Goy had the first 3 years of committed work. And part of what you get during that time is that you get to eat any of the perot that are grown. But that turned out that the Jew who got the next 3 years ended up basically getting the perot that he was getting from the perot that the Goy was getting of Orla, and Orla is Osir Ba'anaha. And that was the Shaila, whether there was an issue of the Jew's benefit from the perot Orla by paying off the Goy. And there they came to ask Rava whether it was over. It was a completely different thing. So Habi Oviko Chaviv Acho Shnei to Orla, the Goy, he got the rights to the first years of fruit. The Yisrael Shnei the Hetera. And they came and asked Rava. And Rava said that was mutter, and that there was no problem. And of course, that's mutter. That has nothing to do with the case on Shabbat, because even if they accepted Lechatchila, and even if they had gotten together originally without making any types of tznai and so on, there wouldn't be any problem in that, because there's no Isser in working a field during Arla. There's no Molechat Isser that the Goy was doing. The fact that the Goy was taking the Perot is, he could take the Perot, he could not take the Perot. There may not even be Perot. I mean, whatever. That's whatever you do. You do your work, you have your, it's your field basically during that time, as you're certainly not my shliach to take the perot. That was your presence whether you wanted to take the perot. I didn't even know if it would be perot. So that, what does that have to do with the question of the thing over here on Shabbat that we were talking about in terms of our Mishnah, but the actual work for the Jew on Shabbat is Asur, which is certainly not the case here. Says the Gemara, well, how could that be? Because if that was what had happened with Gevira, then how did everybody come and attack Rava? I mean, Ravina said to Rava, what are you going to do about the deal about working on Shabbat of a sudden? Shut the foot. They should have laughed and said, what does that have to do with this? But Osei Ravina Rava, says Rav Gevira, well, you got that part wrong too. Yes, Ravina did say that, but not as a question. He brought it as a proof to Rava. You got the whole case mixed up. What he was trying to say is that since it says, even the Gabe Shabbat, where you make up l'chatchila that you're going to be shutafim in this fashion, that then it's not viewed as an issur because there's no problem of shlichut. So you see that wherever there's no problem of doing something in the shlichut, which is of course over here, there's no problem of doing something in the shlichut, even if you're my shliach, you're allowed to work, and a Jew's allowed to work a field during Orla, he's allowed to fix the trees during Orla, there's no issur on the malacha. So Ravina was trying to show, yes, Rava, you're absolutely right. Because after all, we see that where there is no problem, such as on Shabbat where there is a tonight, and that's the equivalent of a case of Orla, even where there is no tonight, that it's perfectly okay. So why shouldn't this be perfectly okay? But if he was bringing it as a proof, what about the end of the story, which was that Rava was embarrassed? Va'ichtiv. Oh yeah? Lohayad varmolam. Somebody threw that in. Just to make it more, human interest story. And nothing to do with what happened. It was a simple case, problem is Orla, Ravina brought a proof to Rava, and that's what happened. Iboilo. Stomamai. Now what would be the din if there was no particular arrangement that was made? Now of course it immediately jumps into your mind. Okay, well that was the question of whether it says, im hitnu mitzila. And on the other hand it says, im bo lecheshbon basov, mashba, that if there was a stam, that would be okay. And this is exactly the rise that the Gemara is going to bring. So if there was no arrangement of Katsila, I just naturally gravitated to it. The Goy assumed, well, the Jew's not going to work on Shabbat, so I better take that day. And the Jew, of course, accepted that. He was a nice guy. He took an additional day during the week, and then they worked it out. So what would be the din over there, where he never ever told him to be a shliach for him to work on Shabbat? Tashma. Well, I mean, it says, im hitznu mitzila mutar, which implies that only and only if they made a tonight, they made a condition before getting into the arrangement that the Jew is not responsible for Shabbat in the first place, that he would have to make a shlichut, mashma, that if no specific arrangement was made, that there was an understanding that both were equally responsible for all days, including Shabbat, and then even if they would naturally gravitate to the Jew not on Shabbat, that wouldn't matter, because it was still his responsibility, and the other one is in essence doing the work for the Jew. Mashmah would be mutar. Hastama would be asur. Hastama asur. Well, I mean, yeah, but I mean, you could take a look at the end of the Mishnah and conclude the opposite. You could say, im seifa. Im bo'u l'cheshbon. It says over here, if subsequently they make an accounting and they take into consideration the work on Shabbat of the Goy and try to even out the profits and what it was that the Jew had put in terms of the week, that then it's asur, which would imply hastama mutar, that if there hadn't been any accounting and no arrangement had been made. Now, of course, you see the problem to the Ravid Shita over here, because according to the Ravid, the Bo B'cheshbon actually destroys the case of Yitzanami V'tilah. So what does this have to do with anything? And this is the, of course, he has to change his understanding of the whole sugya based on this question. So hastama mutar, you see from here that min hastam, it's mutar. Elamiha lecha lemishma mina. From here, obviously, we cannot bring a raya. Now, in fact, Tosus asks from this second raya, im bo lecheshbon asur, and he asks, how do you know? Maybe it means im bo lecheshbon asur, even if you had made a specific arrangement and condition initially. The fact that it's turned into a farce, which is indeed the raya of Shita. The fact that it's turned into a farce at the end, and you go to an accountant and you do include Shabbat for the Jew. So that means that it was us, and maybe that's what it means. And Tosfos says, look, the Gemara is obviously taking for granted that the im hitznu mitzila is mutter under any all circumstances, otherwise all sugya falls apart. Right? Hadron alach, well, before I say that, now the Rambam paskins l'chumra, even though we left this hanging. And as we said, everybody questions, why do we paskin l'chorma, since this is an issur d'rabbanan, and the Gemara never ended up paskining one way or the other. So we should have paskin l'kula, because that's the Rambam's klal, and the Rambam paskins l'chorma, we're very machmir on these issues. So the most learn that the problem is that the Gemara took for granted that since Ravina, and Ravina of course is Sofo Ra'ah, since Ravina attacked Rava in the original version, and nobody used this as a way out to say, well, what's the problem? Why did it have to be Hitznu Mitzchilah? Maybe they just naturally gravitated in the case of the Morikai. Nobody said that. The Gemara took for granted, oh my gosh, Rava was very embarrassed because he didn't know that there was any upfront condition. Rava could simply have said that you don't need a condition. This was sort of, it just worked out this way and that would be okay. Mashmur, we take for granted that it was not okay. It's only the only thing that's left hanging is Aliva, the approach of Rav Gavia Mibei Katil. But according to the original approach of the Gemara, nothing was left hanging. We never even raised the issue. It was clear that unless there had been a specific tonight, that it would have been answer. And Rava was only saved from his embarrassment by the fact being different than what he had known, that in fact there had been a tonight up front. There's another very interesting maisa that Tosis brings over here, which was a case that happened in the days of the Rabbi Natan and caused a major machloket at the time. It was a case in which a Jew had collected for a debt that hadn't been paid. He collected the ownership of a stove, an oven, and a bakery. And this oven now belonged to the Jew. And what happened was that there was a baker, there was a goy, and there was the Jew himself, and that he took over some of the days in the bakery, and the goy was baking on Shabbat. The bakery was open the whole time. And they were disturbed by this and brought it to the Re because of this Gemara. There had been no Tanai, and he had gone and he had collected it. And the Re came along with a very interesting distinction. And he said the whole Gemara wouldn't apply in that case. Because the only time that we see that there's a problem is where there's an interrelationship between what's done on Shabbat and what's done during the week. But the bakery doesn't have to be open on Shabbat. Now, the field needs to be worked. You're going to have to take care of it on Shabbat. You don't water it. You're going to, it's a gan, remember, it's Morikai. So this is karakum, which is a very sensitive plant. If you're not going to care for it on Shabbat, then the Jew's not going to be able to have his plant during the week. So over there, they're interrelated no matter what. That's why we need the Tanai and so on. But why would we need a Tanai about something which, if you weren't working with it on Shabbat, would make absolutely no difference as to what was going on during the week? So who's to say that such an arrangement would be a problem? You're doing it here and I'm doing it there. Never the twain shall meet. We're not being machalic in the prophets or anything like that. It's basically two people working with the same tanur. Now, nobody liked that. and it caused a lot of problems. And so it does just bring some of the various shittas over here. And he says, Rabbi Natan fought against this, and he said that since we see in this sugya that it's the problem of the shlichut, which looks like you're being ma'amit po'el v'yadayim. It's as if you're putting the guy to work there for you. That's the problem. It has nothing to do with the benefit that you get out of it necessarily. There may be a general problem. And there's even a shita that went to the opposite extreme, which is the shita of Rabbeinu Elchanan, which Tosfos also brings over here, who said that by the Tanur it's even worse. And it wouldn't have helped to make the Tanai l'chatzila because over there, the Jew owned the Tanur since he had taken the Tanur over here. And therefore it's like renting out your Tanur on Shabbat and so on. And then he's saying, you take the schar of my Tanur to neged the work that you're going to do for me. But the case that we have over here of the Kablanut was Shutafut B'yachad, in whatever level of ownership there is. If it's a Kablanut, so it was a Shutafut to the Kablanut. If it was Shutafut to the ownership, it's Shutafut to the ownership. But over here, there's no attempt to make it a Shutafut to the ownership. So that means that I own the business, and I'm renting it out to you to work on Shabbat. That I can't do. So it's completely on the opposite extreme. And so this brings it, even the Re had Charota in the end, and was Moda that not all the way to the Rabbeinu Elchanan, but was motive to the Rabbeinu Tam, that you really can't make an apkamina, and so on. All right, there's a lot of other interesting details over here. This Gemara is brought up by Reb Moshe many, many times in the course of his tshuvas. There's got to be businesses that are open on Shabbat, and there's a lot of fascinating interactions over here. Yes.
Yeah. Shouldn't it be like the debate about Hassan Goldberg's bakery?
Why should I know? Those were very special things, the things that no one would be working on.
The bakery didn't.
No, it wasn't a Jewish bakery. It was a Jewish tanur. He owned the tanur.
No, not the bakery.
No. All right, we're now ready. Are you ready? Hadron alak lifnei behem. You can tell. You can tell that there's been some rest. It's beautiful. Beautiful. Ein ma'amidim ve'iman. We had this mishnah, this sugya earlier. Magabi the din of mechira, and we brought this in, and here we finally get up to the sugya of the chashash on the relationships of goyim to animals. So in ma'amidim be'ema b'pundakaot shel ovdei kochavim, mipnei shechashudim al haridiyah. We're continuing now in terms of the harchakot that we have from goyim. And here we think about not only the questions of lifnei iver, but also the questions of isur that are nogeya to us and danger that's nogeya to us. So, okay, we start off with sort of a continuation of the first concept, which is the lifnei iver. We don't want to stable our animals by goyim because they are chashud al rabiyah. We're afraid that they use animals for immoral purposes. V'lo tityached isha imahem, a woman should not be alone with Akum, no matter how many of them there are, they take for granted that they're allowed to expect sexual favors. Nor should anybody be alone with a goy. They're also very likely to kill a Jew if they've got half an opportunity, and therefore don't be alone with them. Now here we have some of the same problems that we had earlier. Bramini. We asked, of course, from the difference between mechira, legabi lifnei iver, and stabling, and we had a number of approaches, which Rav in the end gave up, and he said that Rav had originally said it was dependent on minhag, then Malcolm Shasser and Karner. In the end, Rav admitted that that's not true, and actually the difference is whether it's their own animal or whether it's somebody else's animal. So we'll get into this sugya again over here. Bramini. Now here it says you're allowed to buy an animal for a korban from a goy. And of course there ought to be certain problems that are associated with a korban because you are not allowed to use an animal that was actually set aside for Avodah Zarah or had been worshipped as Avodah Zarah or had been used for immoral purposes. And in that case, how could you buy from a goy? And yet it says over here, v'ein choshishin lo mishum roveya, you don't have to be afraid if it's a male animal, that male animal was used for sex, or mishum nirva, or if it's a female animal, had been used as a female, v'lo mishum mukta, nor do you have to be afraid that this was set aside for takrovis avodat kochavim. That does this point out, we'll see later on. There actually is no isur of mukta per se, just because a goy says this is holy to the church. It doesn't mean anything. There's no concept of kedusha for the church. It wouldn't have created isurim. The only time we have it in a mukta is where an animal was given over to the church and had been fed the entire time from takrovis akum. And then we'll see why there was an isur being nene from takrovis akum. But that's what it means over here. V'lo mishum ne'evad, nor do you have to be afraid that this animal was itself worshipped or was some kind of holy cow. So, bishlema mukta v'ne'evad. Okay, understand why we don't have to worry about mukta v'ne'evad. Im ita de'aktia, v'im ita de'palchia. If, in fact, the goy had set it aside to be brought as a korban for the Avodah Zarah, or if, for that matter, he had actually worshipped it, obviously he would never have sold it for a Jew, so avimad's been like. That's understandable. But why would we not be afraid that he had used this animal for purposes of roveya v'nirva? El roveya v'nirva lachush. Omer of tachlif, omer of shilav aravina, mishvei derav, as we saw earlier, ovei kochvim chasa behemto shelo teater. A goy The belief was that any type of interspecies sex would destroy would make the animal fertile, would destroy its ability to reproduce. And because of that, they would not want to hurt their animals. After all, why would they want to limit the reproductive abilities of their animals? So they wouldn't do such things. Says the Gemara, well, hatenach nekevot. I mean, that's only female animals. But zicharim ma'ikalameimar. What about males? Now, the question so far on the males is limited to a male animal that's being purchased from a male. We'll see later on, there's additional questions in animals, male animals being purchased from a female. But the discussion over here was in terms of a male owner. So what would be the problem? Obviously, you're not going to sterilize a male animal by having anal sex with a male animal. And that's absurd. Nobody would have believed that. So what would have been the chas al behem tov with a male to a male? And it says the Gemara, Omer Kanahil u'makfishan makfishin bibasar. Since that would cause problems of the animal for the animal's anus, so they would be careful not to do that either. Now later on the Gemara is going to ask, well, what about a male animal with a female? Can you buy it from a female? Over there you wouldn't have a chashash of makfishin bibasar. Tanya, and what about the brisa, which we saw before also? You can buy an animal from a goyish shepherd. Now, a goyish shepherd, he's shepherding animals that don't belong to him, and he, of course, doesn't care what he does to the animals. It's not any loss for him. So why would we have a right to buy from a ro'eh? Lechush Dilma Rab ala Ro'eh. Why aren't we afraid that the Ro'eh used this animal for sex? Because Mikyarei Mishum Hepset Sakhar. He's afraid that if people find out about this, he's going to lose his job. Because they don't want their animals damaged by a Ro'eh either. So then, Hadatanya in Masrim Beimala Ro'eh Shalem, I don't understand. So then, how do you explain the fact that a Jew is not supposed to give his animal to a non-Jewish shepherd because of lifnei iver problems, and that the ro'eh will use that animal for immoral purposes? Why don't we say the same thing? That the shepherd will not take the chance of doing anything to the Jew's animal because he's going to end up losing his job. Answers the Gemara, because Jews don't think that way. In other words, a guy who's used to the idea of sex with animals will suspect the ro'eh, and he's going to take steps to find out whether his animal's been hurt. But the Jew would never occur to him such a thing. The ro'eh figures, this innocent Jew will make use of whatever it is they have, and there's not going to be any problem. So therefore, inhu di yadi da'adade, they who know all about each other's behavior, so they're mirtate. He's afraid of being discovered, because he knows that the guy's going to want to make sure. Whereas Anan, to lo yadinan, but we who are not familiar with their behavior, lo mirtate. They're not afraid of that, and therefore we have to be careful, at least they there, of not giving our animal to a shepherd. My rabbi said, Rabbi, that's the common saying that people say. Kind of the Amri Inche. Mechatava yalala baza. In the same way that shayish, yalala is marble. Marble is penetrated by the chisel when you're writing on it. When you chisel something for writing, you don't call it a chisel. I'm thinking adam is also just, it actually cuts the, maybe, and I think it's a special kind of stylus. A machteva means, of course, a stylus. But in any event, the marble knows well the penetration of the machteva. So too does ragla bachavre yada. That's Rashi's gears, the way we have it. A rigla, somebody goes around discussing things about other people. They know each other. They know what to be afraid of, that the other guy is going to say about them. A normal person doesn't think in this way. So here too, the people know about each other, and therefore they're going to come to discovery. Mashain Kane, the Jew, who's not familiar with this type of penetration, he doesn't have that type of discovery either. Now, Tosis is geared, so it's not rigla, but digla. And digla, and this is, I'm just bringing up, this is such an interesting machlokas that we have all over. There's a lot of times that we use digla, such as shnei talmidei chachamim medgilim etzav halakha, hakadosh baruch hu ohavein, dichtiv, diglu alai ahava. So the diglehem, a Rashi said over there, which is tragic. Rashi said over there, diglehem is a lashon of dega, medgilim. It's like you make each other shine, so to speak, unfurl, and you put up the other guy's flag. That's great. Tosfos says, no, that's not the meaning. Digol means failure, ruination. Madgilim, that means the two of them are idiots. Neither of them know what they're talking about. Each one is like some stupid spar, like you often find. Nonetheless, HaKadosh Baruch Hu Ohavein, even though they're stupid, because they're trying their best to work things out with each other and so on. Right? And he brings the right from the context, because that's where Rava talks about knowing the Tzurata, the Shmaita, before you start talking to each other. I mean, you've got to know something about putting together the structure of a sugya. So clearly it's talking about not doing things right. And there's a lot of places where Tosfos keeps, Rashi keeps learning Digol is a Lashon of Degel, and Tosfos keeps learning Diglo means to jump over something, to miss the mark, essentially. So Diglo Alayava means even if you miss the mark, it's okay, Alayava, I still love it. So here too, he learns Digla means somebody who's never on target, who's a Shakran in that sense. So the a digla, a shakran, knows the type of things that another shakran says, and he's aware of the type of attacks that you can bring on him.
He takes what the
known one. He takes what the known one, exactly. Mm. Exactly. That's how we say it in English. So therefore, the guy is not going to have a problem. So if we buy a behemoth, it's no problem, because the behemoth that he was caring for, he, even the Roe, is going to be careful about, since they were non-Jewish animal owners. Hashem came to give an animal from a Jew. He's not a kosher to Jew. So then, but if that's true, then why are we allowed to buy male animals from a female? Because a male animal from a female, if the female is using the male animal for sex, it won't damage the male. And since it's natural sex in terms of male-female, it's not going to cause any makfishin bebasar either. So why aren't we choshesh there? So iyati zecharim nikevot lo nizvon. Zecharshin and dilma merava le'iluyeh. We should not be allowed to buy male animals from a female. No. Kivan demigre ba mirtat. You see, a woman knows that if she turns an animal on, the animal is going to keep coming after her. So basically, that's all she needs is for an animal to attempt to mount her during the day when she's walking down the market. Everybody's saying, that's rather strange. And, you know, so she, in order to avoid her own embarrassment, she's not going to take a chance on such a thing. But wait a second, if that's true, so then how does Tani Rav Yosef? Rav Yosef says, and this is how we paskin, that a almana, our malta, lo tarbi kalb, an almana should not have a dog in the house. Nor should she rent out a room to one of the yeshiva boys. Now, Vishwan and Barbe Rab understand not to have the yeshiva boys in the house because Sneava, obviously, if they have something going between them, they're going to be careful not to show us. That I understand as a chashash. But the dog, I mean, if Lamaisa, she gets this dog turned on, then this dog's going to be coming after her all day. So Kima de Migraba Mirtata. I thought you just said that we don't have a chashash. We don't have a chashash regarding the animal for purchasing for a korban. Why would there be an isur for an almana to keep a dog since nobody is going to take a chance on having sex with the dog? Kima answers the Gemara because a dog is different. A dog keeps after you for a lot of things. So in other words, if you throw food to a dog a couple of times, every time you pass by, the dog's going to be jumping all over you also. So, therefore, she figures people will say the reason the dog's coming after me is because of my dog. I mean, I take care of dogs, always do that. Doesn't necessarily mean that we're partners. So, since Shadia, even the Chishadia, like Umtsu, Master Chabasar, since if you throw a piece of meat to a dog, the dog is going to come after you anyway. So Neymarami, she thinks to herself that the people will be saying, Neymarami, in shape, hi, the Nisachabatra, the reason the dog is following you around is Bishum Umsa, the Kamasach, it's because of the food. And that's unique to a dog, and therefore, since in that case, she does not have any fear of having, of consorting with the dog. So here too, so therefore we'd have to be machmir that an almana should not keep a dog. But when it comes to buying an animal, I mean, a cow is not going to come after you because you put some, or a bull is not going to come after you because you put some oats in his trough. He's going to come after you because he's feeling his oats. And that is something that she's going to avoid.
Is it halakha
l'masa? No, Tosfos actually talks about why it is that it's not halakha l'masa. And Tosfos is very bothered. I mean, actually, the opening Tosfos is yesh li tein ta'am. We've got to find some reasons. Why is it that we indeed do this, and we do leave our animals with goyim and so on and so forth? It says, don't try to tell me that this is a culturally dependent behavior, like we said earlier in Rav's, we said in the first parrot, that Rav said it's all basically culturally determined. It depends on Mokam Shinoagu, because the two sugyas are interdependent, because remember, over there, the Gemara said that Rav was moda, that was wrong, and that wasn't the solution. So it would appear that this is a normal chashash. We have to worry under any circumstances that people will make immoral use of animals. Tosis's answer is premature for us to discuss, because we haven't seen the sugya, but we'll bring it up. And in fact, as you say, the Tosis points out, this is not our behavior. La halacha. The part about the almanah is la halacha. Because, I mean, that already is exceedingly common, even among Jews. I would say a long-term relationship with an animal is dangerous. You know, especially in the case of the almanah. So, now, the question over here is, one case was left out, because we said before that nikevot, etzel nikevot, were also us. Now, you've explained to me male animals with females. You've explained to me female animals with males. Male animals with males. But you never explained to me why female animals with females. You're going to have a hard time explaining what possible problem could come out in that case. So, nikevot, etzel nikevot, my timer. Because even assuming that they have a good thing going, there's no issue really involved, obviously, in having some type of lesbianism is not viewed as sexual activity, la halacha. So what's our problem of having nikevot, etzel nikevot? My time alone, mi yachadina. Omer mar ukva bar chama, mitnei shalvdei kochavim, mitzuhim etzel nishech Abraham. It's very simple. It's because even this woman, even though there's no male around, that means nothing. By a goy, there's always males around. Because the neighbors are coming over at night. Now how about if she's not home? Now, if she's not home, the guy didn't make this trip for nothing. So he finds this lovely animal and figures, okay, she's basically as good as the lady is. And so, Pamim Shena Motzah, Motzah Da Behema, Verov'a. And as a matter of fact, there's even an approach. Even if he finds her at home, if it's a Jewish animal, he'd rather have the Jewish animal than the Goyish woman. They'd much rather have a Jewish animal than a non-Jewish woman. The Omer of Yochanan, the reason for this is, as Rabbi Yochanan points out, that B'sha'ashaba Nachash al Chava. Originally, when the Nachash slept with Chava, he tilba zuhama. He made her disgusting, in a sense, because he made her more an animal. So, therefore, there's a certain loss of attraction and an animalism that's associated of this zihima with a goy. Well, what do you mean? I mean, so Jews weren't affected by original sin? I mean, yachi Yisrael nami. True, but Yisrael she'amdu al har Sinai paskuzu umatam. We know that on har Sinai, all of the original impact of the Nachash was lost. Therefore, they don't have that same sense of zuhama. But in Alvei Kochavim, so therefore, they still are affected in a more profound way by the sense of emptiness or forlornness that this zuhama causes. And in a relationship with a goyish woman, that is always a factor that causes a loss of attraction. Mashenkin, a Jewish-owned animal, reflects the Jewish lack of zuhama. And therefore, there is a special, and we're incredible. I mean, if you'd say the Arizal had a sense of this, you know, and he was able to see the Zoom, I understand. But that the guy that's working in the you know, that's making the deliveries, the delivery boy in the Makolet, that he knows the difference between the Pesach Zoom Arsham is an astounding thing. Absolutely astounding. So it's just asked, I mean, where do we get this from? How do we know this? One of our questions about all this, we've been talking about buying animals. What about birds? Ofotmai, do we have a chashash on sex with birds? So can you buy a bird from a guy that you're going to use for the korban? You know, the same questions. Toshma, the Omer of Yeram Shmu, Mishum Rabbi Chanina. Ani ra'iti ovet kochavim. I personally saw a guy. He bought a goose from the marketplace. Rav'a, chanka, tzal'a, v'akla. So he figures, all right, we'll screw it, and then we'll strangle it, and then we'll broil it, and then we'll eat it. So we might as well go all the way. This was the absolute sex murder kind of, and eating. It's all together. You've got, what's the name of that crazy guy? Who ate tongues?
That's the guy
from
Chicago, Dahmer.
That's the guy,
the
sheep.
Oh, Ledger
would
eat everybody.
That's Hamlet. Right. So, Avamer Birmiyam Idifti. You say, Birmiyam Idifti, I got a better one for you. Anira Iti Aravi Akad. I saw an Arab who was really hard up, and he was Lokav Yeret Minashuk. He just went ahead and he bought a piece of meat, a big piece of meat. The chakak bug today would be, it makes a little hole in the meat. And then rav'ah, and he sleeps with the meat, you understand? And then sal'ah va'akhalah. So if you want to know what can be done, there's lots of things that can be done. And Ramela, if you're talking about people that have no hang-ups about this issue and have no moral constrictions and so on, there's no particular reason why a human being would not do whatever is available for him to do. So if you're choshesh, then you have to be choshesh on any level, both in terms of the lifnei iver or in terms of the purchase, unless you have specific reasons to think otherwise. This, of course, predates the Kinsey Report by quite some time, although the Kinsey Report did have an extremely high percentage of people that lived on farms sleeping with animals, overwhelming proportion.
Now, what about the Goyim,
We're going to talk about all this. We're holding right now in the middle of the sugya. We'll see a completely different approach tomorrow, Bezrat Hashem. Yeah, it's a little hard to imagine. You know, an avaz or anything. What's that? Yeah. So Shabbat is out about. I have a little problem that I'm out of town. I'm going to be in Beit Shemesh, and I'm a little bit afraid that I might be in the fast space if we make it at 9. Do you think it would be okay if we made it maybe 9:30?
It's good for me on that side.
Okay, so. Why don't we have Shir in the go along?
I got to see the news.
That's great. So 9:30, all right. Well, you'll be able to see the new airport.